Greetings, this is James Gillen, I'm your host tonight. We've got another great show. We've got Michael Knight on the show, and he's the owner of the Portland Preparedness Center, and he's also the co-producer of Contact Has Begun. And I don't want to go into a long, long bio. Everybody knows Michael, and I want to just cover a couple things before we start. And one is, it is a full moon tonight, so bear with us. The coyotes are going nuts outside. The solar streams are coming in, and the cosmic ray index is up. So it's going to be a lot of aurora borealis going on and a lot of crazy things. So I guess when we get to the call-ins, we'll find out more about that. On the news, the Soviet Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev, he's just announced that UFOs are here. They've been living among us for quite some time, and there are Men in Black programs, you know, that are in place. And I guess the good old USA, with our transparent policy, are the only ones left on the block that are still denying the existence of UFOs. So anyway, with that, there's a lot more I want to talk about tonight, but I want to bring Michael on first before we get going. So, Michael, are you with us?
I sure am. It's a pleasure to be here, James.
Yeah, welcome to the
show. That's an interesting introduction that the Russians are announcing that UFOs are here for real and Men in Black programs are out there. It's just fascinating to me, too. And you mentioned transparency. Well, about the only transparency I've seen for a couple of years now is transparent lying.
Yeah.
On a number of subjects.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. You know, that the only thing that's really transparent is that it's more of the same.
It's definitely more of the same. And, you know, to say everybody knows Michael well, I think that's a little bit over the top. Just real quickly, my background is that I'm from New Zealand. I've lived in the States for about 20 years now. And back there, I was a journalist starting in 1960, so that ages me somewhat, but I'm still as young as I was. And in those years, I've covered a variety of subjects and done a lot of research. And I got out of the mainstream media many years ago because there was too much
deception.
Well, they were too close to the politicians and not close enough to revealing what the politicians weren't telling us.
Yeah.
And since I've been in the States, I met you a few years back, and we got together and created what I think is an extremely informative documentary, Contact Has Begun. So when we get to talking about that a little down the line here, I've got a couple of nice stories to tell about that and about being up at your ranch.
Okay, great. You know, it seems like the movie is finally just taken off like crazy, and I guess Gaiam TV is going to be showing the movie, and there's a few other outlets where it's taken off. And I know John Savage over there has been showing it at film festivals over in Bar Harbor in Maine. You know, so it's a film that's way ahead of its time, but now everything that was talked about in that film is unfolding.
I know. I recall you were talking about the sun and how it was going to go ballistic at some point, and, you know, two or three years later, here it is. We're
yeah.
having daily bulletins from spaceweather.com about the sunspots and the potential for C-class, M-class, and X-class flares. And those are things that, you know, we never heard about back then when we were making the documentary.
Yeah, what's funny about that is I wrote about that in 1982 in my books, and I talked about the expanding sun and the escalation of Earth changes and all these other things, and was pretty much kicked out of Dodge for being a fearmonger. But now that all those things are here, you know, we in the book it talks about the gray men and the international banksters and what they were up to and, you know, all of that stuff, you know, the was all covered, as well as the fuelless energy technologies, everything that was going to be coming out, and these are those times.
Well, I think that 20 years of drip-feeding information out there, being called a fearmonger, I've had that accusation made at me quite frequently, and I've come to the understanding that fear is something that is a choice. It's a natural response when you hear bad news, and if, you know, people think that, oh, earth changes is bad news, so I don't want to really listen to that, and you're just fear-mongering. But not everybody continues with that line of thinking. Fear can actually be a genuine motivator, but people have the choice between being motivated to switch off, because it's the, you know, the fight and flight syndrome. The brain looks at these pictures as you're talking about earth changes and so forth, or talking about solar flares cutting out the electric grid around the nation and around the world. And when they get that image in their heads, they flee from it. It's the flight aspect of the the fight or flight syndrome. So they just switch it off and go into denial. You can't blame anybody for that, because it's a perfectly natural reaction for some people. Others look at it, hold the image, ask themselves, what will I do now? Mm-hmm. And they don't fight what they know. They just observe it and say, it would be very wise to do this, this, and this, by which I mean, let's be prepared ahead of time. And mm-hmm. I'd like to keep it really simple. I talk to customers at the store down in Portland, that's in Oregon, by the way, and I just tell them that if you keep it simple, imagine there's a storm coming and you can see it on the horizon. You've got yourself a raincoat. You're prepared ahead of time. It's really that simple.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I've noticed is that there's two things people fear most, and that's change and the unknown. You know, they don't want to move out of their comfort zones, and they're afraid of the unknown. And so if you're talking about change and you're talking about things in the future that are getting ready to manifest, you know, you're talking about the unknown. And so that fear is an automatic response. And I know with a lot of people say, well, you're doing fear porn. And I said, well, not really. I said, what's happening is you're afraid to look at the obvious, that you're afraid to look at the statistics, the history, the archaeology, the geology, you know, all of the records, you know, the ancient records, everything. You're afraid of looking at all of this to come up to with an educated, you know, understanding of what the potential is to unfold. And I said that I'm not afraid of looking at that, and I'm not in denial that it's all happened in the past. And according to the statistics and everything else, it looks like something's coming in the future, you know, some of the same events that all the ancestors warned about. So, and that's the way I look at it. I said, you know, they go, well, you're in fear. And I go, I have no fear. I've already died a couple of times. You know, I'm not afraid to look at it, and I'm not in denial.
That's another thing we have in common. You know, I never told you about this until we'd finished making the movie, but I've also had a near-death experience. And so once you've had that, you know that, okay, I'm just a spirit inhabiting a body. Mm-hmm. And while the body can be afraid of the idea of death, the spirit is actually immortal. So, you know, this has been a realization and an experience for me, which did away with the fear of what's occurring. And again, like you just said, looking at the statistics, the realities, the record, here on the West Coast, we've had, just in the last couple of days, the anniversary, the 300th anniversary of an earthquake and tsunami, mm-hmm. which occurred right about the Strait of Juan de Fuca. And the tsunami went across to Japan. Well, back in 1700... the Japanese were keeping records of earthquakes and so forth. The scientists here, the seismologists and so forth, discovered that there was evidence of a great tsunami coming onto the coast in Washington. And they dug through it and they dated it, and it indicated to them that it was about 300 years ago that it happened. And it was a magnitude 9 earthquake, which is, you know, super big. And then they were able to verify this through the records that existed from 1700 over in Japan. And that tsunami traveled right across the Pacific. Well, what it means is that we have evidence from the past that these things have occurred. We have evidence of lost civilizations, evidence of earthquakes that took out the city of Alexandria in Egypt. You know, there's many statues and so forth just under the water over there because over a period of time, earthquakes and rising sea levels took out that coastal city. Mm-hmm. So the past is a window on the future. The planet is a living being, and it's in its own cyclical way of evolving. We as human beings, because of the lack of information and the lack of education, imagine that we just live on a dead rock. We imagine that it won't happen in our lifetime. But the truth is that there have been many people, such as those who were killed in the Haiti earthquake, about 300,000 people, 200,000 people killed in the 2004 Boxing Day Banda Aceh earthquake and tsunami. For some people, it does happen in their lifetime. And all the signs and signals of nature at the moment, not just on this planet, but throughout our solar system, indicate that things are reaching a tipping point, and we're in the process of experiencing that tipping point.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so many changes going on. I always tell people that, you know, this solar flare activity affects the bioelectric fields around the humans, and it creates a lot of changes on the Earth. And there's just a massive influx of energy, gamma ray bursts, many from unknown origins. You know, used to be 50 or so, and now it's 500 a day, you know, of these bursts hitting the planet. And you know, we're coming into alignment with galactic plane. We're on the edge of it now. We're feeling the effects of it now. And as we move closer into it, you're going to hear all kinds of crazy things going on, and a lot of equipment failures and car failures and computer failures, phone failures. You know, everything's acting up. I was just paying my bill the other day with AT&T for my cell phone, and I was talking to the guy, and I said, "Hey, are you having problems over there with your phones?" And he goes, "You wouldn't believe what's going on." And I said, "So it's a lot of technical failures and computer failures and things like that." And he says, "It's crazy." He said, "It's crazy." He said that they're having a lot of serious problems. You know, I won't get him in trouble because I won't give his name. But it's just interesting how you get little tidbits, you know, like that. And, you know, and the Mayans talked about this shift happening in, you know, 2012 on the 21st. Well, that's the beginning of things. Everybody thought it was going to happen and everything was going to flip and we'd all live happily ever after, you know, or be gone, one or the other. But it just doesn't work that way. It's the beginning of these where everything escalates.
Absolutely correct. And the Mayan calendar, I'm sure your listeners, our listeners tonight, are very familiar with that. And they never said that it would be the end of the world. But a lot of people bought into that thought. And I guess it was promoted by, whoever wanted to promote that particular idea. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it was the end of one cycle and the beginning of another. I think it was going from Pisces to Aquarius. And I'm not, you know, I'm not into astrology or anything of that nature, but I understand that what's happened is we have gone through a shift, which doesn't just involve our planet. It involves the solar system, the galaxy, the universe itself. Mm-hmm. And those of us who've been studying these things realized well before December 21st that it was not going to be the end of the world. It's simply a transition. And the energies which are coming in are, to some people, frightening, but again, it's because they don't understand. A lot of these energies are going to be extremely helpful to us, but we're in transition. And it means that, you know, we get these ups and downs and mood swings, days of extreme tiredness, other days where we feel fine, moodiness, and, you know, all those things go together. But if we allow ourselves to just go with the flow and see ourselves experiencing this, but being beyond it, have a goal in our minds that we're going to be here in 2013, 2014, 2015, and we're going to be safe through whatever changes occur.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing, I've used this example before, but Stanford Research did some research with monkeys, and they exposed these monkeys to fluctuations in the magnetic fields to see what would happen. And they exhibited behavior from comatose to self-mutilation. But we don't have to behave like monkeys. If we're aware of these energies, we can learn to flow with them and become the observer, and just know these highs and lows are coming in, and you know, pay attention to the solar flares and whatever else is going on, you know. And then it helps you depersonalize these energies rather than getting into, you know, emotional outbursts or blaming others for your condition and your process. And I'm seeing that's the main thing. Some people are going to act like monkeys, and other people are going to rise above it and just, you know, kind of observe it and, you know, flow with it and call on the whatever Lord God of their being to help them clear it and get through this process.
Absolutely correct.
You know, going back to that research, I've noticed, you know, I have a dog, and we have a couple cats here. Actually, we only have one cat now. But we have, you know, watching the animals around here, I can tell. I mean, there's days my dog, her ears are down, and she's just like, has to be right next to you, you know. She's like going, what is going on? Or he is, I should say. But the other dogs, I've seen her doing that too. I've been around some other dogs, and they all get that way at the same time. They're sensing a change, you know, a shift is going on. And if you just
exactly.
watch...
Exactly, and this is the wonderful thing about animals, is that they are far more in tune with the energies, the electromagnetic frequencies. You know, when we talk about energies, we're talking about invisible frequencies of different frequencies, and they affect us in different ways. I've got a friend down in Portland, Oregon, who has a dog which is just, you know, a real happy dog most of the time, and then suddenly it'll come and sit by his knee and stay there for an hour or two. And then we'll hear about an earthquake down in Southern California. The animals are really aware. And so, you know, we should keep an eye on them, just see if they're going to have strange behavior. And that can be a clue.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe monkeys are smarter than us in some respects.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. You know, I heard one teacher say that we've fallen below the animals because, you know, when these big tsunamis came, most of the animals went to high ground, and a lot of people actually went out and go, oh, the tide's down, I'll go pick up some shells, you know. While the animals were getting out of Dodge, you know, they sensed it, they felt something was coming.
That's right. Well, with that sort of knowledge, I have a newsletter through my website which deals with a lot of these subjects. Mm-hmm. And I call it Wise Prepper News. And the reason is that for the couple of years I've had the store down in Portland, the people who do come in there tend to be very wise people when it comes to the idea of being prepared. So although I'm of the mind that the majority of people sort of brush the idea off, there's a huge percentage of people who are self-motivating. They're independent thinkers. And independent thinkers are the sort of people who will get a bit of flack from their friends when they think outside the box. It's sort of a tribal thing. You know, the tribe wants you to be like the tribe. And for a visual of that, just imagine you're watching television, college basketball, They'll spend 2 hours talking about the game that's going to happen, and in the background you will see literally hundreds, if not thousands, of students, college students, from this college and that college, you know, supporting their teams. Thousands of students on one side of the stadium are dressed in red. Thousands on the other are dressed in gray. I think I was watching this morning, actually, a game between Georgia and someone else. But it just occurred to me that there you have conformity, which is fine in itself. But what if a person within those thousands of students dressed in red, what if one of them decided to wear white? What do you think the rest of them would do? And that's what it is when it comes to individuals deciding for themselves that they're going to swim against the current. They're going to swim against the social mindset that everything's okay. As long as I can get to McDonald's, as long as I can make the payment on the car, as long as I can meet the mortgage, there's nothing to worry about. Life is normal. Whereas those who dress in white instead of red are saying, things are looking a little bit shaky around here. I better be prepared for this, this, and this. And the bottom line is that if you're if you're prepared for one emergency, you're actually prepared for all of them. All right. Well, folks, James has taken a little sabbatical there. Sometimes the phone connection to his place up there at Cloud Lake underneath Mount Adams mysteriously goes quiet, frequently, apparently, while he's doing a radio show. We won't call that interference. We'll just call that a technical glitch. Maybe the sun decided to aim a little B-class flare at his resort. Those of us who have been to his ranch, of course, have always had a wonderful time. I find him to be a very honest, very straightforward, very knowledgeable, very wise individual. When we were doing the documentary, he told the story about his drowning experience when he was body surfing down in California. He got dumped by a humongous wave, and when he woke up, and he was probably half a mile out in the ocean, and when he woke up, he was on the shore throwing up. But between those two times, he had gone down a tunnel and found himself in a realm where everything was beautiful. And he had a talk with, and it was a mind-to-mind or thought-to-thought conversation with the consciousness that he met there. And what struck me about his responses to my questions was that he said after a while that, what can I do? And I would like to return and be of service. And this great mind said, as you wish. And that's when James found himself waking up and throwing up seawater on the beach itself. And he recovered from that and followed his inner promptings to find himself up at Mount Adams in Washington State, not too far from the Columbia Gorge.
Hey, Michael, I'm
again,
back.
While making the documentary, I asked him how he found his way there. And he had said that he'd had dreams and visions of a little mountain. And somehow he found his way to Mount Adams, and I was driving down the road there. And believe it or not, there is a road called Little Mountain Road. So that's an indication of how you can, from time to time, be inspired by a vision, which gives you a look at the future. Your personal future.
Hey, Michael, we're back. Ranch. Can you hear me?
Well, James, you're back?
Yeah, I don't know what that was all about.
You're back, James?
Yeah.
Well, James, I've just been telling this wonderful story about how you got dumped in the ocean down in California and went to see the Great Spirit and finally wound up at Mount Adams.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks for covering for me. That's really interesting.
Not a problem.
Our whole net just went down, and I don't know what we were talking about, but apparently someone didn't like it. But it makes me just want to go further. Hey, you know, I want to talk about, it's a little off the subject from where we're going, but, it's kind of interesting. I want to talk a little bit about our beloved president. I'm getting all this like hate mail when I just point out, you know, something's wrong with this picture or whatever, you know, or something's, and people just blindly following and not asking any questions, you know, no critical thinking. It's just unbelievable. You know, and I was talking to this one person, and finally I said, I go, hey, come on. He promised to balance the budget, not raise taxes, end the wars, close, you know, Guantanamo Bay, stop the torture. You know, he signed the Patriot Act with even more teeth. He signed the NDAA Act, you know, which allows the government to grab you anytime, anywhere, you know, hold you indefinitely, no trial. And, and he's out there. He's out there just assassinating people with these drones, hitting weddings and gatherings, you know, family gatherings and things, you know, major collateral damage with a lot of women and children involved. And then, he uses the children as a tragedy to go forward and disarm the people, you know, pushing this Second Amendment thing. And so, you know, I was telling people, I said, well, what happened to our right to privacy? You know, our right, freedom to assemble, you know, like, look what's happening with all the protests, you know, how the agencies are all gathering together to stop the protesters and infiltrating the protesters. You know, I just said, what about, you know, practicing our spiritual beliefs? You know, you can't have any kind of a religious, icon or anything anywhere now if you have any connection with the government whatsoever. You know, I'm all for other people putting their programs on and unite, you know, maybe have a little statue of Allah and Muhammad next to Jesus and Mary or Buddha, you know, that's all good. But let's not just, you know, cut one out. And then the freedom of speech is basically gone, you know, and basically now they're going after the Second Amendment. So, you know, I've been looking at, you know, what's going on. And the latest thing is that he's going to the high ranking military officers and saying, will you fire on the American people? And if they say no, you know, that's the end of their career. And this is coming out all over the airwaves now. So, you know, that being said, you know, it's just like part of me is going, what is wrong with this picture? You know, I mean, we all took an oath, you know, to, you know, in school, you know, pledge allegiance to the flag, you know, and read the Constitution and everything else. All of these people took an oath to protect the Constitution. Yeah, but I'm just saying it's totally been trashed redundantly. And there's an extreme, you know, betrayal of trust. And this government, this corporate USA, which has taken over the Republic, has also just trashed everything that America stands for. I'd love to get your comments on that.
Well, let me start with a visual. Let's visualize a canvas on which there's a painting. But our focus is on the center of this canvas. Let's call it a 8-foot by 8-foot canvas. And right in the center of it, there is a little dot about the size of a pinhead. And that pinhead has a name. That pinhead is the President of the United States. Not to, you know, be derogatory about the President. And at present, we are focused on that one little dot on a huge canvas. And we imagine that that one little dot on a huge canvas has all the power in the world. We wonder why this individual is taking responsibility for multiple drone strikes, killing men, women, and children as what has now become known as collateral damage. Used to be known as killing civilians. Mm-hmm. We get emotionally engaged in rhetoric, in vitriol, in just feeling bad about what's going on and how this is affecting the U.S. Constitution, which it seems to have lost any meaning, but now expand the vision. Imagine that this great canvas has been painted over a period of probably 270 years, little dots being added piece by piece. Now, where was the first dot made? I wrote an article recently because I've been researching this subject for 20 or 30 years. And just recently I came across a website which gave us a timeline on how things have come to being as they are. And it has to do with a guy by the name of Rothschild. That was the name he changed his name to, way back in 1743, I believe it was. And since then, that dynasty has gradually established itself in secret, behind the scenes, as the controller of all the world's finances, controller of all the so-called central banks. It owns the Federal Reserve. The descendants of that dynasty, the various families involved, are spread around the world and control the central banks. But their game and their goal has been what we now call the New World Order. And they intended, from day one, to literally own the world. Sounds like a phenomenal dream, but that's a dream that they focused on and their descendants have focused on. And currently, their hope is that they will achieve that goal very soon. So the president has signed all these new laws and re-ratified the Patriot Act, et cetera, et cetera. But he's only one player within the big picture.
Yeah, I agree. The you know, the thing that that irks me a little bit is that people wave, you know, their donkey flag and they say, you know, he's the new Messiah and all these things, and they believe everything that's being told to them in the beginning, you know, and they all get their hopes up and tears and they're going, yeah, finally we got our guy in there. And you know, it doesn't matter which party, you having a vote is just to give the illusion that you have a choice, because they both run the same program. They're going to do what they're told. And people get upset about that. But, you know, this hope and change and everything else, it's like, you know, I just wonder how many times people are going to fall for the same thing. You know, it's like doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result, is a form of insanity. And we've been insane for God knows how long. You know, I think maybe Kennedy was one of the last people that actually took on these guys, these secret societies, and look where that got him. But
yes,
you know,
you'll find that over the years, a few presidents have been willing to take them on, and they've very rapidly ended their, put an end to. Lincoln,
either Kennedy,
others. Now, that's historical information.
Mm-hmm.
today we're in a situation where it seems to me that what they call the powers that be are accelerating their efforts to achieve their goals. But the person has to question all of this, not in a negative way, but in an objective way. And when you question it objectively, you start asking, why are we continuing to fight wars which we'll never win? Why are we continuing to run up, and this is not just the United States, but countries around the world, why are they continuing to run up debt, again, to these central banks, as if they'll never have to repay those debts? Why is it that corporations have contributed and governments have contributed millions of dollars to preserve heirloom seeds in the Svalbard seed vault up in Iceland? What do they know about the future that they're not telling us?
Yeah,
what can we find out about the future that they know?
Yeah, the massive.
What can we surmise about the future? And this goes back to our original discussion as we started the program. One can surmise that they know that there are massive earth changes on the way. They've had remote viewing programs which, you know, transparently, supposedly, were discontinued. But the remote viewers accurately foresaw many of the potentials ahead of us. There's a major Ed Dames, which people may have some question about, but, excuse me a second, they foresaw a kill shot from the sun. And one has to ask oneself, why is it that governments around the world are building deep undergrounds for themselves without telling you and me where they are and without telling us that, yeah, you'll be all right? They tell us we need continuity of government. So they have these underground shelters where the politicians can disappear and be safe in the event of something like a nuclear strike, but not for you and me. Why is it that Russia has been building, I haven't been able to confirm this, but I was just told recently, they've been building something like 5,000 undergrounds around Moscow to protect their people. China has been building cities in the highlands, well away from the coast, cities that can house millions of people. But at the moment, those cities are empty. Mm-hmm. What is it that governments know that they're not telling us? And yet hints of what they know keep surfacing.
Yeah. Well, Australia's got some major undergrounds going. There's all kinds of countries that are getting involved in this. And so on a huge scale. So, again, you know, as you're saying, what do they know? And also, too, they know that with this huge derivative bubble, you know, with all these junk bonds and derivatives, there's no way that that can be paid off. And it's starting to hit right about now. And people are going, where's my money? You know, and they can't pay it back. So you know, even in an economic meltdown, it's going to get, you know, get ugly. And they know that. So they're going to have to hide out you know, these, the untouchables, you know, the banksters that nobody can prosecute or deal with, and just keep giving more money for what you can only call theft and embezzlement or whatever. You know, it's just unbelievable. Like, there's so many elements that
it's unbelievable.
Could,
and yet at the same time, if you look at it objectively, these entities, I call them, these individuals are extremely intelligent. Mm-hmm. They're extremely focused on what they want to achieve. And they're very powerful. They have controls that you and I know nothing about. Mm-hmm. But if you're playing chess, you know, sometimes something will happen out of left field and you'll lose a piece. But if your end, if your intention at the end is to achieve a certain goal, then you're prepared to sacrifice your pawns and your rooks and your knights and so forth. And you create a situation that is to your benefit in the long run, even though it means the loss of your pawns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the derivatives bubble, the bailouts, the economic uncertainty that we're going through, what if this is absolutely planned down to the last detail so that when the economies of the world really go tits up, people will start clamoring for a new global currency?
Oh, yeah.
And who's going to be there to offer it to us? The IMF, the Bank of International Settlements, the World Bank. And there we go again. We have a new currency, we have new cards, we have new IDs, we have new bank accounts, and we don't have cash anymore. So that everything we do, which is what happened, this is why they introduced the credit card and the debit card, everything we do can be put into a database, and that gives the chess player an indication of how we are going to play.
Definitely.
That's, I believe, what's really going on.
Well, I know if,
People will get disturbed. Go on.
Well, if you know the agenda of the New World Order or the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, if you know about their goals and their agenda, you can observe this and see how everything that's going down is going down exactly the way they want it. You know, right down to the getting rid of the Second Amendment and getting rid of you know, the people's right to bear arms, because that is a major block in their program. You know, that's one of the big ones. They want to get rid of that. And, you know, I wanted to cover that a little bit. I don't know, have you been following the Sandy Hook one?
Yes.
You know, this is what I'm trying to figure out. You know, first of all, they have in the Batman movie, they have Aurora and Sandy Hook, and said this is where he'll strike next. And they point at it, and what happens? Aurora goes down, and then Sandy Hook goes down. So either these guys have the best psychics for writers or a crystal ball, or they're just letting people know this was going to go down. You know, they knew, they were letting people know ahead of time, which is part of the program. You know, they need to warn people first and make it, and then they can pull off their stunts. So I was listening to it as this was unfolding, and first of all, this emaciated kid, you know, who's very small frame, not very strong, I guess kind of autistic or whatever. You know, this guy comes in like Rambo, I guess, with four handguns, and then he had two handguns, and they had, and then it came out that he had two hands and an AR-15. You know, this is really mixed up. And then they said he didn't have an AR-15 because it was in the trunk, but that turned out to be a shotgun. And you know, which is, I mean, that was just such a mess, that whole program. But this kid, you know, has all this gear on him. He comes in and he kicks in this 700-pound wire mesh window to get inside the building, you know, smashes it in, which is not an easy act for somebody like Rambo, could probably pull it on, not a kid like this. But then you listen to the police reports, and it says shooter down, one in custody. Okay, the shooter's dead or on the ground dead. And then they got another one in custody. They got two guys dressed in black running towards the gym. They got one of the guys caught in the forest. You know, all these guys disappeared. No mention of them later. And then they have parents. You know, their kid just got killed, you know, a day or two before. And they're on TV smiling and laughing and acting like nothing happens. And then they have this psychologist guy on the news, all over the news, telling a different story every time. And then you find out he's not even a psychologist. You know, he's not even a psychologist. And then the school nurse, who's not licensed or registered, you know, gives false testimony about the mother being a teacher who wasn't a teacher. And, And then the latest one was that the coroner reports that show that Adam died the day before the shooting. And then they show a picture of all the police arriving there and the window still intact. You know, the window that he supposedly went through. And then on top of that, the coroner says that all the kids were killed with the same assault rifle, you know, which fits into let's ban all assault rifles. But, you know, I've been following this and just nothing adds up. And the people I've talked to, people that were involved in these situations, the setup was wrong, the response was wrong, everything. It's just a smelly kettle of fish, you know, and I'm just curious what your take is on, and it does fit perfectly, you know, the end of the program, never let a tragedy go to waste, or, you know, just to lead the people emotionally. And, you know, I've hunted most of my life. I kind of gave it up. I evolved out of it, but I don't really do it anymore, you know, but, you know, and I would love to have a gun-free place if we could trust our government and if everybody was healed and there weren't people on drugs running around whacked out and people poor and, you know, no money and just trying to get some money for food or whatever, the poverty that's creating all the crime. Yeah, let's end all that, and I'll be glad to give you my gun if it meant all of that would be ended. But unfortunately, we know what happens in past history when populations are de-armed or have their arms taken away.
Well, there's so many threads to this, James, which as you follow one, you find yourself coming across another, and before you know it, you're involved in a ball of spaghetti.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's difficult but essential, again, to step back and look at your sources of information and check them out. Do your own research. Go on YouTube. Get, input Sandy Hook and look at the various videos that are available outside the mainstream media. And you start to get your personal understanding, which is not complete at any moment, but you get a better idea of the anomalies involved in this one particular tragedy. Those anomalies you've mentioned, some of them. It plays into the concept of creating a new world order. If you have a population of people that outnumbers you just about 1,000,000 to 1 or more, think about it. 12 families, who knows how many is in each family, 12 families against the entire United States. And their objective is to control all the resources of the world and all the people of the world. There'll be people listening to us now who are familiar with the Georgia Guidestones, which, mm-hmm. like you were saying, seem to be a pointer to their objective, as if they have to tell us in a roundabout way what's coming up, what their intentions are. And why would they do that? Perhaps they're arguing that we are using our free will to accept what they are doing. And they can then argue to a higher authority that their control of the planet came about because we freely accepted their control of the planet.
Yeah, they warned us and we didn't do anything about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this is the one that...
It's correct to imagine that there are people on this wonderful little orb that flies around in space at an incredible speed that we don't notice, people known as sheeple. Mm-hmm. And as sad as it is, that's the way it is. But the sheeple do outnumber those of us who are prepared to look at the evidence and ask ourselves, How does this tie into other events of the past? Why was it that in 1968 there was a gun control law passed by President Johnson sometime after that particular tragedy and tragic assassination of John Kennedy? That was a little attempt, initial attempt, to start controlling the guns of America. Well, since November, since Sandy Hook, and just in November, December, close to 5 million people went to the store and bought firearms. Seems to me that what's happened is a 5 million strong opposition was created after that tragedy. Mm-hmm. And the opposition is, we're opposed to, and I'm not talking for myself necessarily, but I'm saying that those who bought guns have decided we're opposed to what's going on. There was a guy down in Texas who managed to organize a great protest around the nation with thousands of people going to various capitals in the various states, protesting at the new gun control ideas. Now, there's an upside and a downside to that. It's an expression of the way they feel about having their Second Amendment rights taken away. But the downside is that this could lead to civil war. It could lead to major demonstrations. It could lead to people being tasered and hit with water cannons and so forth as they fight to restore or control or maintain their rights under the Second Amendment. But where's the future in that? The freedoms and liberty that people imagine are associated with the Second Amendment have already disappeared. Mm-hmm. Legally, because the politicians signed into law the Patriot Act, the NDAA, the Health Care Act, which requires doctors to ask questions about whether or not you've ever felt depressed, whether or not you ever felt like harming somebody, and everything goes into a database. I guess I'm getting a little bit off on a tangent here.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean this whole thing, this Robbie Parker thing, went, that just pushed me over the edge. You know, I don't buy into all conspiracy theories, you know, but a lot of them aren't conspiracy theories. They're fact. I mean, I don't even know why they call them a conspiracy, because if you do the research, they're based on fact. But this this thing where this guy made a Facebook page asking for donations, like, you know, literally hours after his daughter was gunned down, and then goes on TV smiling and laughing and joking. And then when the camera turns on him, he's saying, hey, should I just read from the card, or should I just, you know, act it out or whatever? Yeah. And then he goes into this big dramatic hyperventilating and crying. You know, so he can cry, and that's an acting trick, you know. And these guys are actors. It's very obvious. It's been established. But, you know.
Yeah, another interesting video I saw on YouTube was that one of the children supposedly killed in that tragedy was photographed. Her picture appeared as being one of those killed.
Yeah,
and then there was a picture of Obama with some of the surviving children, and one of those children was one who was supposed to have been killed.
Yeah, with the same dress.
See,
yeah, we're in the exact same.
Today we have access to an alternative media, and this is the beauty of the internet. We have access to alternative media. In the past, the media was totally controlled by surrogates for the powers that be. They bought Reuters, or some people call it Reuters, back in about 1812 or thereabouts. And they've controlled the mainstream media for many, many years. But today we have an alternative, and we can do our own research. We have independent, fearless people who are asking the questions that the mainstream media refuses to ask. And I'm, you know, personally totally disappointed in journalists of the present age. They are just sycophantic propagandists. They just buy the official line, and the official line is orchestrated. It's put together regardless of what happened on the scene. You'll find in all the coverage of things like 9/11, the Oklahoma City bombing, and Sandy Hook, the local media does interviews with eyewitnesses, the Aurora shooting. And an eyewitness will say something, which we can see on YouTube now, which was on the local media once or twice immediately after the event. And then it disappears from the narrative. And so we're being fed a drama that's intended to create an emotional firestorm in those who are emotionally inept. And they then demand that we have a response. Well, if a kid can carry four handguns and an AR-15 and go and kill 27 innocent children, that's certainly an emotional story. But if you've ever handled guns, if you've ever done target practice just at a few feet, you will know that a handgun, you shoot it six times, you're going to miss the target one out of six.
Oh, yeah.
And every individual involved in these shootings, this Sandy Hook in particular, is dead. There were no wounded. How can this be? I mean, this is gruesome, but it's truthful.
Well, yeah, multiple shots to, you know, right to the head or the heart, and that is gruesome. But that's what happened, and you know, this emaciated kid, you know, that was autistic, to go in there and act like Rambo with extreme training and multiple clips and pop them in and out and have no failures, you know, there's always usually failures when you shoot whatever, 1,000 rounds, you know. It doesn't make any sense. And to me, the kicker was seeing at least three or four confirmed Facebook sites and people. I mean, I'm not going to say their names. I don't want to get in trouble, but major people, groups, you know, were asking for funds, and their sites were up, you know, some were up on the 9th, some were up on the 11th, you know, and the event happened on the 14th, and they already had their website, their page created and up, you know, and they keep trying to dismiss this, but, you know, they're saying things could be changed, but it, you know, it is really, you know, it says on Google when this was loaded, you know, so, mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't make any sense at all. The way people are behaving, the acting, if you lose your daughter, you know, hours ago, your first thought is not putting up a page to get money and donations. I mean, you're going, oh my God, you're trying to process it. You're picking your wife up off the ground. You know, she's probably falling apart. You know, you're talking to other relatives, you know, you're not making a page asking for money.
You know? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah, and if you are, you're a pretty darn sick individual. You know, it's you know, capitalizing at, you know, at the expense of these children is beyond sick.
So how do you think, James, how do you think we should, as individuals, respond to this? How do you think we should look ahead to our personal futures?
Boy, that's a good question. To me, I see that, you know, first of all, you know, we need to really educate ourselves as to what is unfolding and know what the agendas are, know what the plans are, and then you can see how all these things are unfolding. That's the first thing. you know, get educated. You know, the second thing is become the observer and observe it. Don't get emotionally led down these trails. That's what they're doing. They're creating these, that old, was it the Hegelian dialect or whatever, where they create the problem and have you react to it and then say, we have the solution, you know? So anyway, rather than reacting to it, just observe it and just say, wow, you know, okay, this major event happened. Does that fit into the agenda? Oh yeah, it does. Watch it being spun and used, you know, and watch the solution come forward, which is really not the solution to the problem. It's the agenda being played out, you know, because I mean, it's very clear according to the numbers that where this happened, they had the strictest gun control laws on the planet, you know, basically. Not on the planet, but they had really strict gun control laws there. And these were no gun zones, you know, where these events happen. They're in, you know, most of these events are in, you can't have a firearm.
But James, you obviously don't understand something here. I got to take you to task on this.
Well, I'm
going to
keep going.
Don't you know that in no guns allowed zones, criminals don't carry guns? That's Kiwi humor.
Oh yeah, I get it. Yeah, so anyway, did you see that video? I love that video where they went around and they said, "Well, you know, you posted these articles and you want everybody to give up their guns and this and this," and they went to all these executives, like newspaper executives, and the people that wrote the articles, and even up to, I think it was Eric Holder's house too. And they said, "Hey, I want to post this sign on your, you know, citizens for a gun-free America, you know, that they want you to post a sign on your front door that says, you know, there's no guns here." And, you know, and it was funny because even the guys that were pro and trying to get everybody to disarm and everything would not put that sign on their front yard because they knew that that's just, you know, an open invitation for a crime, basically.
Right.
And once screaming the loudest for gun control and disarming America have the, you know, they have the biggest entourages of armed agents surrounding them. And from, they even signed bills to even keep that going for years after. But, you know, they're carrying arms themselves and they have it's quite interesting. You think about this, you know, it's like. It's, well, how come the elite get to carry their guns and have a full contingent of armed guards and we can't? You know, that seems to be something wrong with this picture. You know, why did elite, you know, have access to all this mass firepower, but, you know, the citizens can't, you know, and you know, if we look at the past history, we have to look at other countries where this happened and look where that went. I mean, you know, if we're trying to stop genocide, we need to look at other countries and what happened. And hopefully we can get, looks like we lost Michael. But I wouldn't be surprised considering the fact, you know, what we're talking about, that we might lose a few connections here. But anyway, hopefully we can get him back on. But you know, looking at this whole thing, it, you know, we just have to look at it and be the observer and get a, you know, get an objective viewpoint of this and know the agenda of what's happening. You can see all the things, these things are, you know, the banksters bailing out all the banksters, totally looting America, you know, throwing people into abject poverty and putting a debt on people that they're never going to be able to pay back. People losing their homes, losing their jobs, while the banksters are living high and drinking champagne, you know, no, the untouchables, they call them. All of this stuff fits right into that plan, you know, to put people, you know, they want two classes. They want the elite and they want the poor. And that's basically what they want. But, you know, anyway, there's just so much to this whole thing. It's so transparent. It's, the script is so transparent unfolding here. I just hope the sheeple are going to wake up and figure out what's going on, because it is pretty crazy. But anyway, hopefully we can get Michael back on the line. Hopefully I'm still on the line. It looks like we are. But this is what happens. You know, this happens all the time when we start touching these areas, you know, that we start bringing common sense into everything. You know, but again, you know, I'm not, I'm a very peaceful person. I'm not here to incite riots. I'm not here to create, you know, an armed response to what's going on. Hopefully people will wake up and in mass and just say, we're not going there. And just say, this is not where we're going. You know, we want our economy back. We want our country back. We want our republic back. We want the Constitution back and start cleaning house. You know, I think Iceland is the best example of what needs to happen. And I think that example, you're not hearing about it at all. You won't hear about it in the mainstream news. They're going to keep it quiet. But what's going on with that is you know, what they did basically is that they reevaluated the whole thing. They go, we're not going to do this austerity measures. We're not going to be thrown into abject poverty. We're going to get rid of the problem. And they did. They got, you know, and they jailed and arrested quite a few of the bankers and took care of the problem and nationalized their banks and just said, okay, we're just eliminating the debt because it was all done on fraud anyway. And we're not going to pay this debt. And now they're flourishing. So, but you won't hear about that. You know, it's really strange. You're not going to hear anything about that. You know, it's because that's basically the path that needs to be taken. But again, you know, we have to realize that, you know, okay, if you were thinking that something was going to hit the fan, that major changes were going to hit, and things like that, you would probably loot wherever you could loot. You'd pull as much money as you could out of the systems. You'd start raising seeds. You know, you'd start hoarding seeds. You'd start building massive underground facilities. You know, you would want to get legislation in effect where you could actually put down any kind of problem. You know, it's you know, all the things that are unfolding right now are there, and you definitely want the people disarmed, and you know, and you'd want them all nice, happy campers on food stamps and welfare, basically. You know, if you could, and that's basically where things are going. They go, oh no, we can't get rid of the government because I won't eat. You know, I don't have a job, I don't have a house anymore, but you know, I won't be able to eat, and I won't. You know, get whatever little benefits I can. I won't get my cell phone from the government. But anyway, it looks like we've lost Michael. We're going to try to get him back on. But, you know, this is pretty normal for these kind of things. You know, I want to cover a couple other things. You know, the Soviet Prime Minister, we talked about that, Dmitry, I think it's Medvedev. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Kudos to him for putting the pressure on the government to release the information about UFOs. You know, it's time that they came clean and you know, they was, well, many other governments have also done the same thing, but now with a major group like a major government like Russia doing it, it just kind of, I think it, put the straw on the camel's back. That's going to break this disclosure thing wide open. Oh, it looks like
Mike. Back.
Hey, to be expected. Well, we knew this was going to happen. You know, it happens every time. But I was just talking a little bit about the disclosure projects and how now that the Soviet Prime Minister has blown the lid off this and urged the U.S. to come clean and stop lying about the fact that UFOs are here. They've been among us and they've been working within certain government facilities and the Men in Black programs and black budgets and all that stuff. It's going to get it really interesting here. And I don't know if you're following this, but I know Richard Hoagland on the radio just said he called, I guess, Alfred Weber and Andrew Basagio crazy you know, he's taken the party line. He's, you know, part of the good old boy club, you know. And I've always wondered, you know, I've known about our secret space program. I've known about the bases on Mars and the moon. And that's never been, you know, I guess I don't know how much he's touched on it recently, but back in the late 90s, you know, and definitely early 2000, you know, we've been talking about this stuff. And once I at a conference, I actually handed him footage, incredible footage of all these UFOs flying around, so he would look at it and get back to me. And he took about 5 steps and threw it on a chair and just kept going. You know, didn't even look at it. You know, so basically, he's not on my list he to me fits into the controlled opposition program, and you know, to keep things, you know, back in the past. And you know, he was saying that they're mining on the moon because they're trying to find anti-gravity devices. You know, and my question is, if you don't have anti-gravity devices, how'd you get those giant bulldozers up on the moon, you know? So, you know, let's use a little common sense here. But anyway, I mean, this is gonna be a firestorm, because, you know, Alfred is very adept at taking care of himself, and I'm sure Andrew is too, and he's gonna address this issue. So it's all coming forward. I'm just curious what you think. I'm just seeing all of this nonsense, the deception, the lying, on every level is just coming to the surface to be seen for what it is.
Well, this is the counterpunch, the thing that is going to change the world dramatically. And I've understood this, you know, since we made the documentary. Since we saw the footage that you'd been taking for years of UFOs over your ranch there at Trout Lake, there are beautiful, incredible, highly intelligent entities from greater civilizations than ours who have been observing us for the longest possible time. And they're well aware of what sort of a bind we're in as a species. But think of yourself individually as that little grain of sand in the middle of that humongous canvas. And that's what we are. But we're also spirits, holy spirits, immortal spirits. The human drama about UFOs is, as we did in the documentary, we were able to include photographs, artwork, going back way before any black budget program existed. UFOs that were depicted in some of the chapels of the world in historical times. There's even one there of a UFO over the scene of the baptism of Christ by John the Baptist. Mm-hmm. And that was painted in the 1700s. Well, coming forward, referring back to the energies that we mentioned earlier, there are going to be strange shifts in the atmosphere, let's say, as energies between dimensions uncloak certain UFOs. And no matter what any government says, those who see this uncloaking are going to know that there's no question about it. Who needs disclosure from the liars who've been lying to us? The disclosure is going to come from the entities who have been observing us. We're going to see with our own eyes that they exist. And there'll be no argument about it. When you see it individually, you won't have to wait for it to be expressed on mainstream TV and mainstream media finally tells you something you can believe. So I'm looking forward to, in the very near future, could be months, could be, you know, a year from now, but I'm looking forward to that sort of wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think with that experience, with the UFOs showing themselves, and I've always said that too, disclosure is going to happen in the skies, you know. And I do support all the people that are trying to get this information out. And a lot of the people with major major numbers and letters behind their names, you know, that are coming forward, a lot of military people and things of that nature that are coming forward and telling the truth about UFOs. And some of them have been here, actually, to the ranch and had their own experiences. But, you know, looking at that, you know, that being said, I think when that happens, people are going to go, wow, you know, wait a second. If this is real, then what have all the institutions been telling me? You know, what have the governments been telling me? The religious institutions, you know, even mainstream, you know, media and the other corporations, why aren't they covering any of this? Why aren't they talking about this? And then they're going to start thinking, well, wait a second, if these beings are floating up around there silently, they've got some major technology. You know, they're not burning oil. You know, they're not, you know, they've probably got some incredible healing technologies. They're not going to be putting all their people on drugs and you know, all these psychotropics and things like that. You know, they're probably extremely advanced, both spiritually and technologically. They can probably read people and heal things, you know, from a distance. And then
just do a cautionary interjection, if I may.
Yeah.
On this planet, there's about five species of human beings, five types of human beings. Our ancestry goes back to the intervention of space travelers, very advanced societies, civilizations from elsewhere. And not all of them are as wonderful and loving as we might like to believe. If they were, then we wouldn't be as warlike as we are. Surely, if we are the genetic descendants of the Elohim or whatever they're called, and if they were totally loving and beautiful people, would we be as warlike as we are? What I'm saying is that, and I remember Michal Ledwith saying this at the conference at your ranch, there are entities out there who are just like us. There's some good ones and some bad ones, some advanced ones and some warlike ones. So it's not as if every UFO that appears in the coming times is necessarily one to be welcomed.
Well, you know, I agree with that. I've always said that just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened, and just because you're on a ship doesn't mean you're benevolent. But my understanding is that, yeah, we have been interfered with quite a bit by some low-level ETs. You know, and some people call them of the Greys and the Reptilians and some of these other ones. But my understanding is that coming to an end. Like, we're coming into a whole new era. The frequencies of the earth are rising. People are waking up, and it's harder and harder for these people to run their programs, you know, seen and unseen, and through the controllers on the planet that are also, you know, being influenced by these beings, if they aren't these beings altogether. So,
right.
Yeah, and so there's a huge cleanup process going on, from my understanding. And the ones that are coming in right now, the majority of them are benevolent. And the ones that are malevolent seem to be coming down in pieces, you know, and becoming little fireballs.
Well, they're on the back foot, but it doesn't mean they're necessarily defeated, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now, think about the Mayan calendar again and how it is a cosmic calendar. It is a record of the ages of civilizations. It's not a day-to-day calendar like the Gregorian or Julian calendars, like the ones we use in our little day planners. Mm-hmm. It's a calendar which spans tens of thousands of years. I was reading recently that one of our scientists has said that it is capable of looking to the past for billions of years. Well, no journalist that I know of has ever asked the question, how come?
Yeah.
The civilization of the Maya was able to look back billions of years, and we only think this planet's been around for 1 million years, or 2 million, or 1 billion, or whatever.
Or 6,000.
Here's the point, though. We are involved in the transition from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. In those great cycles of time, civilizations have reached a certain point, and then those civilizations have disappeared. There's been a few people left to pick up the pieces and carry on. Now, this might be almost a traumatic visual for people to contemplate. But ask yourself, as we did in the documentary, we are so warlike that we want to destroy everything on this planet. As a so-called, we've got to put quotes around this, civilization. Yeah. Monkeys are more civilized than us. Monkeys don't go out deliberately killing the next tribe. They'll defend their own territory, but they won't go out and kill everything in sight.
Or destroy the jungle.
Yeah, that's right. They don't rip down the trees that they depend on for life. So I'm saying that it appears to me that this civilization has reached its, either you can call it its apex or its nadir. It's either as far as it's ever going to get or as low as it's ever going to get, which are both the same as far as I can see. Why is it that governments, the spokesmen for governments, the so-called presidents of this, that, and the other country, are facing off and saying the nuclear option is on the table?
Yeah.
Because they're insane. Because the civilization has really, really stopped evolving. And
yeah,
those of us...
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, my understanding is that it'd be interesting, but I think the nuclear option is off the table because the higher beings are monitoring that and very closely. And they might allow a little small stuff to happen, but not on a major level. I know the Tibetans also... their remote viewers have seen that too, is that the ETs won't allow, you know, the plans of this Illuminati program to go. The benevolent ones are saying, you know, you can take this so far, but you don't have a right to annihilate this entity called Earth. You know, that's not universal law.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that is happening is to know that there have been moments when UFOs, craft, have hovered over missile silos and taken control of the computers and turned them on and turned them off.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're, again, watching on the mainstream media is this nonsense about nuclear war. That's what it is. It's a charade. But it's intended to manipulate people's emotions and get them on board.
Exactly. Yeah, I had Robert Salas here.
I agree. The atomic option is actually a straw man. It's a media frenzy thing which is used to justify preemptive war. How crazy is that? My neighbor might come and break into my house one day. I think I should go and kill him first.
Yeah. Robert Salas was here, and he saw some wonderful ships that were kind of green-colored flying all around the mountain. And I've had him on the show before, and he was talking to me about how, you know, these massive doors were just taken right off of the silos. And they went there, and they deactivated the nuclear missiles just to show what they can do. And they also went over to Russia, and they they took over their computers and took them down to counted them down to zero and then shut them off. And they were like cutting them with axes, cutting the wires and everything, trying to shut these things down. But they made it very clear, that they've even done that with they were doing practice launches, with these missiles, the government was, and UFOs showed up and just knocked them right down. And we've lost a lot of missiles have come down, and God knows how much we've spent, trying to develop this process. So,
Another thing that matters, whether you're Chinese or Russian or Korean or, mighty America, missiles are going to fall out of the sky inexplicably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was reading an article recently about some special so-called supersonic missiles, which NSA has been trialing over the Pacific. And these things are supposed to be the ultimate fast-traveling weapon. Three of them, multi-billion dollar exercises, three of them fell out of the sky. And they tell us, oh, well, it was just, a guidance glitch. Oh, well, it was just, the afterburners didn't kick in or something like that. The fact is that, hey, they lost it because somebody else zapped it. And what you're going to hear in immediate future times, and already we're hearing it, is things about cyber warfare. And there's going to be blame games going on about cyber attacks here, there, and everywhere. But do you think we're the only civilization that understands computer technology? Are we the only civilization that can create cyber warfare? Are we the only civilization that can get into, like China got into some very sensitive American computers? America's been, or Israel or whatever, has been able to do something to Iran's computers. Should we believe all that? Is it true? Or is there something else out there which has done that, just as they switched off the silos?
Yeah, I'm under the understanding that they can. I'll tell you what I've been getting on an inner level. I've been getting that these benevolent ones are basically in charge now, and they're in charge of all the higher levels, and they're stepping in. They're starting to step in, and I know a lot of governments have seen the writing on the wall. And they go, okay, we can't deal with this. We have no defense against this. We there's nothing we can do to maintain. We're just going to have to go with the program here. And the world is like screaming out right now at the U.S. to knock it off, to stop the aggressive, false flags and all these other things that are allowing us to go to other countries and steal their resources. They're fed up with it. And this sounds interesting, and I don't want to give people false hope or think that, we don't have to do anything. We can just sit back now. But I think the energies are sufficient on the planet right now, that the energies coming in are so intense, and that those holding the frequency of tyranny, the controllers, are just not going to be able to match these frequencies. And a lot of people within their own systems are starting to spill the beans and just release everything because they're having an attack of integrity, you might say, or, some of them are getting ready to check out and they're going, okay, I can't hold on to this any longer. I need to tell what really is going on. And we're seeing that on a huge level right now. And I just see this whole old paradigm, this old matrix, this grid that we've been operating on completely collapsing, and I think that people don't realize that these ETs are working on the level of cause, on the level of consciousness and light and energy, and that's where things begin, and that's the ultimate power, and our little fortresses, our little material programs down here are nothing compared to what they have access to. So that gives me hope, we are in that unity consciousness wave. We are coming into an alignment with galactic plane. We've got a lot of help coming in, but we have to rise up and do our part, as the ground crew too, is that we have to wake up and rise the occasion and increase our frequency so they can contact us and work with us.
Absolutely true. And, you know, one thing about our relationship, James, over the years, we don't get together very often, but the way you talk and the way you present things has led me to want to confirm, if I can, what you are saying that you visualize. And talking about the higher beings and their control and their authority over certain things has kept me going over the last several years into doing more and more research. Now, talking about the higher civilizations, you can get photographs right now from NASA, from the Space Weather website, from the SOHO in particular, the SOHO satellite, of pictures of the sun. And a couple of months ago, there was a tremendous triangular black opening on the sun. I mean, the sun is vast. It's a million times bigger than our planet.
Yeah, that happened yesterday.
It was just triangular opening on the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And then it disappeared. After that, I was able to, just a couple of weeks ago, go back to the SOHO website, and I found an animation that I was able to take freeze frames out of, and there was what looked like a winged craft or a winged planet that was there for 2 weeks moving across the sun for a full 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then, just a couple of days ago, another triangle appeared. Now, my intuition, and I trust my own intuition, you can think what you like of it, but I trust it, is that greater beings than us are involved in what's occurring in our solar system, which means it's going to affect you and me and every other individual on this planet, one way or another.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Am I still on air?
Yeah, I agree 100%, basically, because I know that I think the stuff that Ed Dames was seeing with this kill shot were accurate, but there's been a lot of intervention on that. And I know quite a few other remote viewers. Courtney Brown has taken a lot of professional remote viewers, you know, in a triple blind program. And they're all seeing major changes coming in, you know, before July. And they're saying it's probably around March or April. They're not sure. And other people are saying, well, that's a different timeline, you know, very well could be. But, you know, that's another event that's on the books that, you know, they could come in and alter that situation as well. They have the ability to do that. But they also have the awareness or the spiritual evolution to realize that certain things need to happen and the earth needs to evolve and go to the next level and she needs to heal and cleanse herself. And so it's a tricky one, you know, to stay within universal law and honor the spirit of earth and her process and her evolutionary process. But at the same time, you know, realize that a civilization that's totally destroying the very platform for life that it lives upon needs to be altered in some way, you know, needs a wake up call. So I think, you know, they realize that. And so they have to allow certain things to happen because it's part of our learning process.
Well, I've got a word here, which comes to mind. One word, spaghetti.
Yeah.
Spaghetti. And the reason I bring that image up again is we see spaghetti sort of intertwined and so forth. What if each of our lives is a strand of spaghetti? And we actually have control of the future of our particular timeline. There is a global timeline. There is a societal timeline. There's a country timeline. There's an empire timeline. There's an individual timeline. So the majority of people vote for this, that, and the other thing, and they get what they deserve. But we as individuals have the power within us to determine our personal timeline. Therefore, we might say to ourselves, I see myself beyond the chaos, drama, catastrophes, cataclysms, earthquakes, X-class flares. I see myself on the other side of all that. I see myself in the final birthing of a new age. And when we dream that dream, and it's not a dream, it's a creation. When we create that future, it's creating and taking control of our own destiny. Therefore, we see ahead of us great problems, or so they appear, around us in whatever country we live in. We see nature doing its thing and great cataclysms occurring. But we see ourselves beyond all of that. And to me, that's the essence of preparedness. If you start with a goal, and your goal is to be prepared in as many ways as are practical, commonsensical, so that you are able to ride out the storm. Imagine you're on a boat and a typhoon hits and you're just getting rocked and rolled all over the place. Eventually the typhoon goes away. Eventually the sun comes out. Eventually a new shore and a new time appears. You see yourself at the end of the journey rather than that within the chaos of the journey, then you're guaranteed to be there.
Yeah, getting into creationary mind versus reactionary mind, where you just react to what comes, it's so much better to meditate on creating your tomorrow and creating the world, you know, in a different way. And it's kind of tricky because I always say, you know, if you've got like, 7 billion lemmings going in one direction, you know, and you're in front of them saying, hey, wake up, there's a cliff. They may pull you off, you know, off the cliff with them. But I think there's a lot more people waking up, and most of the just simple, good people out there are not buying into all this. And I know in spending time in Mexico, you know, if the grid went down and everything went to hell there, you know, they'd still be fishing. They would still be picking papayas. They'd still be, they'd still have their food, you know, and their families work together down there, you know, and the simple people are going to cruise right through these changes. You know, they're not going to have that big of a problem as long as they just pay a little attention.
And it's the sophisticated people that, you know, we think of ourselves in America, if I may be so bold, as being sophisticated, and we got all the conveniences. Sure. But how did we get here? Because our predecessors started off on the East Coast and said, I want to go to California. Mm-hmm. What do I need? I need beans and rice and beans and rice and beans and rice. And they got bags of that stuff. And they got a wagon and they made the trek. Mm-hmm. They prepared themselves for tough times to get across the country. They grew gardens. You start before the last frost, tilling your garden, knowing that you've only got a few months before winter comes again, and you've got to grow your beans, and you've got to grow your vegetables, and you've got to can what you can to get you through the winter without Fred Meyer and without Safeway and without QFC and without all the supermarkets. Mm-hmm. That is independent thinking. That's what will get people through. Imagine if an X-class flare hits us in the next couple of months. What are we going to do? The computer's gone out in our car, and it's not going to get us down to the supermarket. The supermarket's gone out of action because all the electricity's gone and everything's just been looted and disappeared. Are we able to support ourselves in such a situation? Have we got our feet on the ground ahead of time and said, let's make sure that we have in stock what we need in case this happens.
Well, I think too that people need to realize that, you know, I love that drill where they say just go out and just flip the switch, flip your main breaker and see how well things work out. And we also have to realize too is that a lot of the water is being pumped and the sewage is being pumped. And when those pumps aren't working, you know, that's a real mess. When the gas pumps aren't working, we're not going to get gas to go anywhere. And you know, there's going to be wherever they run out of gas on the highways is where those cars are going to stop. So they're going to get locked down. You know, you look at this. This isn't fear mongering. This is just rational, you know, critical thinking. It's sure. That, you know, how is your house going to get through the changes? Do you have heat? Do you have a way to cook? You know, do you have a, you know, I love some of the stuff that you have there at your preparedness center there in Portland, because especially that little stove you brought up here, that rocket stove. I mean, all you need is a little couple pieces of wood and you can cook all day long and incredibly fast, you know, things like that. You know,
well, let me do a quick plug for the Portland Preparedness Center.
Sure.
You can find us online at GetReadyPortland.com. That's GetReadyPortland.com. And the reason I'm suggesting that you have a look at the website is that it'll give you an insight into what sort of things we have in stock. And if you live anywhere near Portland, you can just find your way to the store. And honestly, in the 2 years I've been there, 99.9% of the people who come to the store are wise enough to understand that they've got to be responsible for themselves, for their families. And a lot of grandparents come in, and they say, hey, my kids and grandchildren don't think this is a very good idea, but I want to prepare for them. And that's a great and wonderful thing to do. Also, on the website, you could sign up for a newsletter. It's a bit in your face at times, but I do my best to look at the global situation, and I research the United States Geological Survey, the European Space Agency, NASA, you know, never a straight answer, but sometimes they give you clues. A lot of information that you won't find on the mainstream media. And it's intended to simply give you an insight into what is potentially ahead of us. It's not predicting, it's not prophecy, it's simply saying these are possibilities. And we recommend that you stock up now. For example, in the United States last year, 47 out of the 48 contiguous states were way above average temperatures. Drought devastated the Midwest, right down into Texas. Thousands of farmers had to sell off their capital stock. Capital stock is what is called breeding stock. What this means is that this year, meat prices are going to skyrocket. Food prices are going to skyrocket. Drought means no rain. No rain means what's in the rivers, what can be taken up for the aquifers and to supply the cities. If the rains don't come again, if drought continues this year, if superstorms occur, water is going to become one of the most valuable things on the planet. Just a few ideas there, James.
Yeah. You know, it is so important because people, there's so many things that could happen. I mean, if this big derivative bubble crashes and the banks, you know, you can't get to your bank account, if the grid goes down and your cell phones don't work and your bank card doesn't work, you know, there's so many things that can happen. And just with the severe weather we're having, you know, right now half the planet's hit with an ice age. You know, it's like, you know, it's getting to be a real mess. But, you know, all of this stuff, it's just common sense that, you know, you want to have at least a couple weeks of supplies on hand, you know, and a way to cook them and a way to stay warm, you know, just get the basics covered. And then, you know, I love what this little old lady said once, you know, somebody was asking her, are you afraid of the earth changes and things like that? And she goes, it brings me great joy sitting down in my basement, knowing I've got a stock of food and a pistol, you know, and she said, I don't fear it. this little lady, that's what she says. She goes, I don't fear anything. I'm covered, you know, I'm prepared. And really that's the attitude we should have, you know, if there's no fear, if you're prepared. And mm-hmm. and being afraid of looking at this stuff and looking at what statistically is unfolding and the potentials there, to me, that is denial, and it's not spiritual at all. It's, you know, enlightenment means,
you know, there's nothing wrong with recognizing that you're afraid. There's nothing wrong with that at all. When you recognize it, and then you understand that the antidote to fear is courage.
Mm-hmm.
Courage gets you moving ahead, regardless of the fact that your knees have turned to jelly.
Or even,
and, you know, I think back.
Yeah, well, preparation gets rid of fear, too.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. You know, the more prepared you are, the less worried you are.
Exactly.
As long as you sit back and watch doomsday preppers and say, well, they're a bunch of nutters. Hey,
yeah.
Great. And what are you?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we're...
I lived in Christchurch in New Zealand years ago. And 3 years ago, they had a major earthquake that wrecked some of the city.
Mm-hmm.
12 months later, they had another one that wrecked the rest of it. Now, the first things that disappeared were the city water, because all the pumping stations went out, and, of course, the sewage system stopped working. And they still haven't got it all back together. They've had 11,000 aftershocks since that time. A lot of people have left that city. In my newsletters, and because of my research, because of what happened with the Banda Aceh tsunami, because of the historical record of tsunamis crossing the Pacific, I recommend to people that they get away from the cities, especially coastal cities. Find somewhere high up and out of the way. And I know this is traumatic to think about, but hey, I've done it myself, and I know it can be done. What other people do is entirely their choice, but I suggest this because some of the remote views, some of the information available right now from, for example, Cliff High at, take a note, halfpasthuman.com. He's been doing research on the internet with a special algorithm for 10 or 20 years, and it suggests that in the next few months, sometime this year, maybe March, April, May, June, there could be what he calls a global coastal event. This could be caused by a number of possibilities, and there's no great clarity on this, but what it means is that the sea levels will begin to encroach on the coastlines. It could be caused by the movement of tectonic plates. It could be caused by a sudden uplift in the magma underneath the tectonic plates. It could possibly be caused by volcanic action under the ocean. But this has been something I've looked at for a while, and it just seems to me that it'd be sensible, if you can, to get out of the cities. I had a customer in the store today. He was a UN observer in Haiti. Again, 300,000 people killed by that earthquake down there 3 years ago. Still, 3 years later. Now, imagine if this happened to you if you live in Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine, or New York, or on the New Madrid Fault that runs from the Gulf of Mexico up to the Great Lakes. They had an 8.2 there, you know, a century or so ago. earthquake occurred anywhere, and you're caught in it. In Haiti, this guy who was with the United Nations force said that 300,000 people are still homeless, and they literally fight over a puddle of muddy water, literally, and they're prepared to kill each other over a puddle of muddy water. That's what is the reality after a catastrophe. So we could do nothing and see ourselves involved in such a traumatic situation, or we could just say, I'm a really flexible piece of spaghetti, and I see myself way beyond all that stuff. But in the meantime, I better get prepared, do the best I can to stock up on food and water and medical supplies and get some medical training so I can help other people if necessary. Thanks for the time, James.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, and again, I guess we're hitting the end of the hour here, so we've got to sign off. But again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And we've already given out your website, and we'll put it on the air. We'll put it on the website here for the radio. But you know, it's really important. So it's the what's the quickest, the easiest way for people to get a hold of your store and get some of the needs, you know, that they might want to stock up on, considering the what seems to be unfolding. I know Courtney Brown saw the same thing, the exact same thing. So Courtney Brown, a lot of remote viewers are seeing the same thing. And it's coming soon. Yes. It's only a couple months away.
Yeah. Well, getreadyportland.com is the website. That's just getreadyportland.com. We ship all over the 48 states, and we have a newsletter. I'd really love it if you'd sign up for that. I do my best to be as impartial as possible and present information about which you can make your own choices.
All righty. Well, we've hit the end of the hour, so anyway, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
It's a great time, James. Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye. We're going to close out the show with REM.